are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got four or five kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
And we all had hard times together. I admit I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad.
It's interesting that I found that little tidbit at the end because it raised a question I wanted to ask of you to sort of tie this all together was, have you ever looked at these groups that are still in existence? Because, you know, we talked about how you can't really meet any contactees anymore and stuff like that. But
yeah.
When I was out in L.A. for Paramania 2 in last April, we went to the Etheria Society. And then, And then then I went down to the one in San Diego like a week later, Unarius. Yeah, so I went to the Etheria Society. And then I went to Unarius. If you ever get out to California, dude, you should do that because they have legit, like, headquarters that are like stepping back into the contactee era in a huge way.
You know, there's a
pictures
there's
on my Facebook. If you have, you should look at
I remember seeing those.
Yeah, they're mind-blowing.
There's an Etheria Society church, I don't know, down in suburban Detroit.
You should check it out.
I know. I'm not sure if it's still open. I first heard about it years and years ago. But, you know, actually, I thought about looking at some of these modern groups, but then I realized that I'm really more of a historian than, you know, by training than I am a sociologist or an anthropologist. So dealing with people who aren't dead, man, that's
harder than
that's a hassle. And they talk back to you. So, dead people are awesome. But yeah, this we were abducted by aliens, the beautiful women who claim ET's got them pregnant. This is nuts because you know what? You and I are not so young that we don't remember a time when talk of human alien hybrids coming back to Earth was what they told us to terrify us. Right? This is why the Greys are taking our DNA. They're creating these hybrids. The idea of these alien human hybrids, this was a bad thing. And here, these folks look happy and or insane.
Yeah, it's a weird movement. It's a weird movement. Yeah. Well, those groups, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to I see what you're saying. I'm just like, maybe I'll look into them more. Because they're like, to me, they really are like, that's probably the closest you can get to a con, because they're like little time capsules, you know, from God knows how long. I assume at least from the 70s, but I'm not sure.
The Etheria Society was founded back in the 50s.
Then they must have had I mean, they have some sweet property, like right in the middle of L.A., so it's like, and it's inside, they have this elaborate church. And the stuff you see from contactee are like paintings, like freaky paintings of like UFOs and shit. It's really like, right. You're like, what is this place? Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I follow the Etheria Society on Instagram, so occasionally they will, and just that's a sentence that shouldn't exist, but I follow the Etheria Society on Instagram. It shouldn't exist. I mean, George King would, actually, he'd probably be pretty chill with it. He was actually a pretty cool guy. But,
yeah, he'd be sorry.
He'd be like, wow, we can, in a deep, rich British voice, we can communicate with all these people instantly. Is this alien technology? Is this technology from our space brothers? It's interesting how some of these things survive. And the line between a sort of saucer religious organization like the Etheria Society and on the spectrum between that and, you know, Heaven's Gate, you know, so sort of the sort of more sinister cult things. And then, you know, there's all sorts of talk about the, the Raelian Society up in Canada, you know, with their cloning efforts.
Oh yeah,
like
the Raelians, yeah.
There's some weird stuff out there, and I think it's if you trace these things back, you know, some of it took the form of spiritualist organizations in the 19th and early 20th centuries. You know, these things, they keep evolving. Religions keep evolving. Religions and religious ideals and things like that change to reflect the times and the culture in which they live. So it doesn't really surprise me that there are these UFO organizations that have these more religious overtones. What does surprise me is that something like the Sirius could keep going so long after George King, transcended to the next level or whatever he did. But what's really interesting is reading Jacques Vallée's Messengers of Deception.
Yeah.
and seeing Marshall Applewhite talked about as a UFO cult leader back in 1978 or 1979. And that's just, you know, it's people were like, I remember when it happened, like, well, who was this person? Why did nobody see this coming? It's like, well, people have been seeing this coming, and this guy's weird. He's been weird for 20 years. But,
yeah, it's crazy.
You know,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
People,
it's like no one had not heard of him. He was actually quite prolific, I guess, or
right.
Well,
I mean, as far as UFO cult leaders go, Bo and Peep, the Bo and Peep cult.
Right.
And then Heaven's Gate with the videos and the internet. I mean, that's one thing. I actually talk about Heaven's Gate, my U.S. history class, because, hey, why not? And it's really interesting because a lot of students don't, like younger students, like traditional student-age students, they don't see what's weird about the fact that this guy was putting videos up on the internet. And I've sort of explained, in 1996, nobody was putting these videos like this up on the internet. Like
right,
this.
Right.
And this guy was doing like weird, rambly YouTube stuff before YouTube even existed, which is sort of from a cultural point of view, pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like he was committed. Clearly, he was committed to this cause. You can see it from there to the end. This guy was going to see it through. It's it's bizarre, but weirdly enough, yeah, those groups are like. I marveled at this on the show before, so I apologize for repeating myself, folks, but it's like when we went to the Aetherius Society last April, there was a young guy like 19 who came up from Florida, and he was like committed to the cause, you know? He had to come up and move there because he wanted to be even deeper into the Aetherius Society, and it was like, that's an interesting life. That's like, I want to see the world through his eyes if there was a way... If I could remote view or something. It's like, what is... I said to the guys, I was like, yes, this is interesting, this church and all this is fascinating, but, like, I'd like to spend, like, a week in the barracks and see what that must be like. Because it's just, you know, like, the guest house. It's like, what are they, you know... do they ever let the facade down? Or is it like this... Are there... I have a million questions.
Yeah, you know, they got, like, the visitor center and all that stuff. But then, yeah, there are people who are – this is their life. And they're deeply invested in this. And that is a strange sort of thing. But, you know, I'd have the same sort of interesting question. I mean, you know, similar fascination with people who in 2017, you know, enter a monastery of some kind, you know. And
yeah, or become priests, yeah.
Yeah, I think of that cloistered life and that sort of ascetic – self-denial. It's like, I mean, honestly, ours is not a culture that understands self-denial, you know, beyond a, you know, you're weird if you deny yourself things that you can have. So it's a different sort of thing. But, and it's, you know, maybe sometimes a little brainwashy, but,
that's what I wonder. You know, like this was just in general. What's the what's the vibe in the break room?
Right. Now I'm imagining the Aetherius Society break room. It's like the same sort of tile and base paint and terrible chairs that every
break
room has.
Yeah, and that really old microwave that's like
that's
somehow
filthy.
Like at least a decade old. Yeah, the buttons are like half worn off and shit. Yeah.
But there's always the one guy who always heats up his burrito in there, not realizing he's getting 18 diseases from the microwave. Yeah. Yeah. And then they put on the robes and go back out and you know, talk to the Martians or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. But they all seem like very nice people, and they all seem like they were really, like very guarded, because I think because of the Heaven's Gate thing, as long as, you know, I think for as long as people know about that, they'll, you know, at Unarius, they stressed that they were not a religion, that they were like, I don't even know, a wellness center or something.
Right. So, this is a center for philosophical study.
Yeah.
You know, sort of thing. Yeah, Unarius. That's another one that's been around for, you know, a very long time. And was it the Unarius Society that the When Prophecy Fails book was written about?
I'm not sure. I don't think so, because it's still around, but I'd have to look.
Yeah.
I think I would remember that, because Greg Bishop mentions that a lot, and we've been down to Unarius, so I figure it's something else.
Yeah, there was a follow-up book called When Prophecy Never Fails. And
is that the Unarius?
Yeah, that one's about, I think that one's about Ruth Norman.
I'll have to read that one, because that sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Sort of like how they keep it going.
By Diana Tumminia, When Prophecy Never Fails, Myth and Reality in a Flying Saucer Group. And I just love that she said flying saucer and not UFO.
That's what I mean, because that's still, I think you can kind of consider those groups, especially the ones that managed to, like, that came up in the, that essentially the roots are in the contact era. So I guess they count as flying saucery.
Yeah, and it was published in 2005 by Oxford University Press.
Is it available? Were you just surfing Amazon while we?
You know, I am multi talented. Yeah, it's available. It's on Kindle for, Lord, $56.
Jesus, how? I thought Kindle was for like super. I thought Kindle was like $5 or some shit. Like it always had to be. That's bizarre.
It's an academic press. I've got a book from Roman and Littlefield, an academic press, and the Kindle version is one penny less than the hard copy version, and it's like $88.
Jesus.
Or something like that. I've more people have listened to any episode of my podcast than have bought that book. But writing the book, you know, let me write off every X-Files DVD on my taxes, so I don't care. Some of these academic books are terrible, and interlibrary loan is the best way to get some of this stuff, because, you know, they price this stuff to be purchased by university libraries. That's why the price is so high from academic presses. So, that's why, you know, students have said, oh, I heard you wrote books. Where can I buy your books? I'm like, you go to the library and you check the books out. You don't buy my books. That's that's crazy talk. Don't buy my books. I got a day job. I'm doing okay. You don't need to go buy my books. use that money to buy your damn textbook. How about that? Could you do that for me? So, you know, it's like, you kids. I know you think it's exciting that I wrote a book, but it's not. But that When Prophecy Never Fails. That's a good one. She's like a sociologist.
I'll check that out. How long is it? How many pages?
It's I can look here on Amazon.
It's like customer service.
240 pages, hardcover. Yeah, it's ranked number 881 in comparative religion.
Nice. Well, I may actually shell out the $50 just to read it, because I'm fascinated by Unarius. So
yeah,
I'll let you know if I do.
Please do, because the copy I got it is you got to use bookstore for like $5. So.
Taking your advice, first I'll call my library and ask them if they can somehow get it.
You know, and listeners out there, support your local libraries and support your local librarians by harassing them to get you every obscure flying saucer book that you can possibly imagine. They will love it.
I assume they could use the company, librarians.
You know,
it's so tough. Towns, I think. In cities, they are all right, I bet, but in small towns.
A lot of them could, I think. I know my wife gets a lot of library books, and most of them are, you know, she's able to get them on her Kindle. You know, she doesn't actually have to go into the library. And although at times we've been to our local library, they seem to
wait. They can somehow send it to your Kindle via the library.
Yes, the
libraries can
subscribe and buy into these big sort of programs, and you create a login with your library card number or whatever. And
what?
You know, you check it out, and it sends you a link, and you click on it, and takes you to Amazon, and you hit the button, it goes to your Kindle, and then it disappears off your Kindle 3 weeks later when the book's due. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
It's the damnest thing I've ever seen.
This might be the greatest insight we've ever learned in the history of this program. It's like a free... Yeah. The library's going to, like, secretly usurp everybody. They're going to be like... Like now you can get a movie through the library for free sent to right to your computer, and people are going to be like, why am I paying for shit?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Whenever I see people like milling around, you know, Barnes & Noble or something, paying list price for books and twice as much as they should for DVDs, I'm like, one, have you never heard of Amazon? Two, have you never heard of a library? You know, this book looks interesting, but... I don't know. I guess I'll buy it. I don't know if I really want to read it. But this is what libraries exist for. It's for reading books you're not quite sure about. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to one-man crusade to remind people that libraries are a thing.
Yeah. Now I'm intrigued enough to, like, go to my library and figure out why it's not, like, as inviting as Barnes & Noble. Because they have chairs and shit. I don't know. I'm going to have to look. Maybe they need to, like, reposition the book so there's one facing out all the time on every thing. Like, if they designed the library like a retail store, maybe they could fool people into going.
You know, there are libraries. When I lived in near Evansville, Indiana, the library there had just had a complete sort of remodel and redecoration, and there were parts of it that were kind of like going to Barnes & Noble. The section with the DVDs to check out was nice. They were on these, like, cool spinners and everything. It was pretty neat. What I will recommend that everybody out there, including you, Tim, do is go to your local library and check out what UFO books they have, because I can almost guarantee they will have a book that you cannot imagine why they have this book. It will be a book that is weird. It will be a book I've seen. Like,
you know something?
Weird.
I haven't never been even. I haven't. I feel terrible now. But yeah, I think about that because I go to Barnes and Noble and I look through the UFO section, and it's like, I guess I just assume that my library will be like my shitty high school library where it was like they had one shelf. But maybe they won't.
Yeah. Well, don't you live in Boston?
Oh, I live in the suburbs.
Well, you can get to Boston.
I suppose, yeah, for sure. I can definitely do that.
Yeah. I imagine that the libraries and even the Boston suburbs are probably pretty amazing. I went to the library and they had the original hardcover first edition of Passport to Magonia there on the shelf.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow. And I was like, if I tell them I lost this book, would I just have to pay whatever they paid for the book? But then I realized that ripping off the libraries is probably, you know, that's some bad.
Yeah.
That's bad. I don't want to be that guy.
Especially when you're on the radio, being like, support your local library, and then it's like, dude, you got arrested for stealing passport to Magonia.
Unless this is all just an elaborate story to cover up the fact that I did swipe the book from the library. It's like, haha, I'll tell them I thought about it, but didn't. Then they'll never suspect that I did.
That's true. And who would suspect the guy who's the super pro library guy to steal a book? That's,
yeah.
No one will ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
You've confessed the crime right here. I'm living an elaborate double life where I'm trying to take down small town libraries one by one.
Well, I was thinking as we were talking about that, what makes it more. I bet you there's a library that has this. I think Greg Bishop's wife's a librarian. Maybe she'll find this part of the show interesting. But, I wonder if you could do this, and I bet you some libraries have, but they should just put a little coffee shop in the library.
Somehow. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
It makes
perfect sense. Like, if you're – I mean, half the reason people go to, like, those places is because they can get a coffee, and then they walk around and look at the books.
Yeah, the coffee shop in the library, that's especially in bigger towns and cities, I've seen that. It's pretty cool. It's a good way for the library to raise some money. A lot of times they have small libraries will have volunteers staff at, you know, Friend Brewing Library group,
yeah,
volunteers doing that. So
boosters.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, the basketball boosters at your local high school, only it's for the library. So yeah.
Well, I'll do it if my library doesn't have a library cat. I'm not a fan of those.
Library cats, yeah.
You know those are real things? Is it like, it's a thing?
Yeah, I know. I think it's weird and off-putting. I don't want to go and see an animal running around, you know, spraying all over books I might take into my home. I am not down with that, as the kids say.
I hope the library cat isn't peeing on the texts, but you never know.
I'm pretty sure if there's a library cat, it is peeing on the text. So. I think that's probably why they have the library cat, so they can say, well, hey, you know, we're going to get back to these people who voted down raising taxes to support the library. We're gonna send books soaked in cat piss into their homes.
it's a long-range conspiracy.
It's all a diabolical plot.
Now, somebody asked on Facebook if we were going to talk about this. I don't even really feel like talking about it, but I feel like we should.
Oh, boy.
Because we did a show the night before it happened last week where Josh Kutcher and I were just laughing about how ridiculous it would be. And then Tom DeLonge had the big Tom DeLonge announcement. And it was just interesting being on Facebook. I didn't see it as much on Twitter. I don't think I'm as connected to the UFO scene on Twitter as I am on Facebook. But it was like...
Yeah.
Just seeing this wave of reactions like you would normally see like at the Super Bowl, you know what I
right.
mean? Like, but with all the people who normally won't post during the Super Bowl, who are like this Tom DeLonge, the time was like just a stream of opinions and stuff and hot takes, just a stream,
yeah,
lots of hot
yeah.
takes.
So many hot takes on Tom DeLonge and to the stars, the to the stars Academy and Entertainment Company.
Yes.
Of some sort. Yeah, it's, I don't know, I'm jaded and cynical about everything, but I am no more jaded and cynical about anything than I am about UFO disclosure. And I am impossibly cynical when UFO disclosure includes, you know, the idea that, well, we've got some insiders from the intelligence and defense community who are going to tell us a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, like hell they are. They're going to tell you things that it's in their best interest to be out in the public.
Right.
And, I mean, not to be one of these paranoid guys, well, they're former people. There are no former intelligence people.
Right, right. Two of them, like they said, quit the day before they went to the panel. So it's like...
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I've thought since the beginning with the whole secret machines and when he started making these sort of preliminary pronouncements that Tom DeLonge seems like a guy who is genuinely interested in this stuff and genuinely thinks that he is going to get to something that is the truth. And I think that there are people who, for whatever reason, you know, see an opportunity to use that for their own purposes. And you know, I mean, I've there's people online whose opinion I think is pretty much okay, who said, you know, at the very least, what we have are, you know, some more information about how seriously the defense establishment takes UFOs. Well, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but I'm not surprised that, say, the Air Force takes things that we don't know the identity of in our skies seriously. I've never doubted that they take it seriously. I don't think there's a revelation there. I think the real revelation is the fact that this new company that they're selling shares of is sort of guaranteed or obligated to give Tom DeLonge $100,000 a year, no matter how little money they take in.
Right, right.
I think it's a huge disclosure that part of the purpose of this new company, if I read the disclosures right, is to cover the debts of previous enterprises that have gone on.
Right.
This is a money-making operation, and
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that. But you know what? I think there might be some – I don't doubt there will be some good entertainment coming out of this from the entertainment division.
Absolutely.
I In, you know,
I thought you meant
every sense of the word. You know, there would probably be some.
I thought
cool,
you meant the Schadenfreude way.
You know, well, isn't ufology 90% Schadenfreude?
Pretty
much. It really is. You know, it's like, oh, we can read the placard on your Roswell slide. Oh, how does that feel, Jaime Masson? how does it feel that you just had to focus? But, yeah, I think it's more red meat for the disclosure crowd. And there's always money in promising something that people have wanted for a very long time. I think we will learn things from this project. I just don't think they're necessarily the things people want to learn. I think we're going to learn that sometimes celebrities are gullible, and that's what I think. And I know there are people who I'm friendly with who are excited and optimistic, and that's great. I think I'm kind of envious that they can be excited and optimistic about this, because I just see another UFO disclosure thing.
Yeah.
This is good, because I knew people who were excited about the citizens' hearings on disclosure.
Yes,
you know,
yeah, I remember
this,
those.
This is gonna break up the logjam. You know, this is gonna end the truth embargo.
I bought
this
the full DVD set. It's like, why?
Why? Some clown already ripped it and put it on YouTube. Man,
exactly.
Don't pay for this. But yeah, you know, that was like it's a government hearing. It's not a government hearing. It's a bunch of former people who used to be in government who've been paid $25,000 to act like they're at a government hearing.
I said on Facebook, it's like, and that seems the prevalent. Rightly so. The prevalent opinion in the UFO circles I travel in is like the money aspect is the problem. And like you said, no one's begrudging this dude for trying to make money, but it's like, you're not going to get my money, man. You
right.
know, because it's to me,
right.
It seems like it's a money grab. And if they didn't, I'm all for the idea in theory on paper, but at the same time, it's like, go do it. Don't ask for my
right.
money, man. Like, you're the rock star. Go form your academy and develop some stuff. I've been hearing about you for like 3 years. Just go do it.
I know. This has been going on forever. And, you know, I almost read, I thought about reading Secret Machines, but I looked at it on Amazon. It was like 400 pages or something like that. I don't have time to read somebody's 400-page UFO novel.
Right, right.
That's based on reality. But I was intrigued by the involvement of Peter Lavenda in it, because I think Lavenda's written some really sort of interesting stuff. And I don't want to say Lavenda is slumming by hanging around the UFO scene, but I was actually kind of surprised to see his involvement with some of it, because that doesn't seem like his. I don't know. It didn't seem like his thing.
Right, right. And the interesting part is because they're coming at it like a corporation. I mean, it didn't. These insights didn't reach like the people that they want to reach anyway. But it's like the UFO crowd, much like the Roswell slides, like immediately dug in and dissected these like elaborate financial papers to uncover shit
right.
that was like, okay, they're going to pay this guy $100,000. This is why this. And, you know, like one of the quotes was like, we currently don't have any money to operate this whatsoever. Something crazy like that, you know, like where it was really, it was quite something to see the sort of collective like swarm on this idea. Like I said, go do it, man. I don't care. Like, go do it. But anyone who invests in this, really shouldn't think twice.
I don't see. I mean, I can see people investing as. I mean, I've seen people say, "Yeah, it's $200. Who cares? You know, it'll be fun to, you know, get the updates or whatever." It's like the world's worst Kickstarter.
That's what I was going to say. Like, you don't want to crowdfund with the UFO crowd because
right.
they are really not. You'll get more money if you want to make like some funky comic book from like any entertainment fandom.
Yeah.
The UFO fandom is very tight-fisted.
We are. I mean, seriously, I've been like $5 a month for coast-to-coast membership. Well, screw that. You know, somebody will put it up on YouTube eventually. You know, it's like, or I'll stay up late and find a station that's streaming it, you know, and you know, put through the little AM stations that have a working link to their audio feed. And I'm not paying. I did for a while. It's like, it's a slight rant about this. At least when I joined the, what is it, Coast to Coast Insiders? Is that, it says?
Yeah.
The MP3s, I understand licensing and stuff, but they cut off the bumper music.
Yeah, well, they hit me for that too, dude. I used to play awesome music, and like, they get on you. I mean, obviously, you'd think that they would pay the money, but I guess it's extravagant. I don't know, you know.
You know, I can see it if it was still like Art Bell's Chancellor Broadcasting Corporation that was, you know, running the thing, but it's freaking Clear Channel. You know, you'd think that they would just have a blanket license.
Yeah, it would make sense. I don't know.
Up to a certain amount, but all I know is that I didn't have the bumper music, and then you know, and it was just like all of a sudden, boom! There's George Norrie talking to me, and I'm like, that's off-putting. But,
all right.
You know,
I'll pass that feedback along
to
my friends.
I need the bumper music, and I physically need the. It's not Coast to Coast without the bumper music.
Right.
No other thing I listen to has bumper music, and I don't care. But Coast to Coast needs the bumper music. It's part of the whole aesthetic. And
I'll ask to see what the story is with that.
Yeah, it's like, well, we can either have the bumper music or we can have the show on the air. We don't have the money to do both. It's like, oh, you know, I imagine.
I have no idea. I'm sure there's all kinds of legalities involved, but yeah, I'll send it up the flag. Well, how did we get on this?
I don't know. I do this. I kill interviews.
No,
you know what really grinds my gears?
Oh, the Tom DeLonge thing. Yeah. So we're on
Tom
DeLonge. So
yeah,
the asking for money part is ridiculous in a sense. I think that just put everybody who's in ufology off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, man, we need money. Like, we don't, you know. Some people can't even buy groceries. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
The economy's improving, but it's tough for some people out there.
It absolutely
and,
is.
You know, young families, the elderly have a really tough time.
Mm.
You know, it's, you know, and expecting people to pay money for something that doesn't even exist. I can see paying it for, like, you know, somebody's Patreon. I think that's, I don't know, Patreon.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're getting something.
Cool.
They didn't really say,
you know,
what you're going to get. You don't get anything. Yeah, yeah.
It is the world's worst
Kickstarter. Yeah.
It is. It's a Kickstarter where, like, nothing's guaranteed, folks. It's like, what the hell am I doing? It's because they frame it as an investment. And I'm sorry, with most investments, you have a little more to go on than we got some insiders. We're going to do some movies. We got the guy from Blink 182. Yeah, what the hell could go wrong with this, right? You know, it's a license to print money, isn't it? If they were just asking for donations, I'd roll my eyes and be like, yeah, okay. But, you know, framing it as an investment is just
tawdry.
It is tawdry. It's tawdry, and it's kind of silly, and you know, that, and then when you read the disclosures, and you're like, you know, this is engineers, so Tom DeLonge gets $100,000 every year no matter what. It's like, oh, well, now I understand, you know, what his angle is. And I don't blame him. If I were able to come up with a contract where, you know, once we form this thing, people pay me $100,000 a year no matter how little money we have, that's awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
that's pro wrestling, man. That's
it is.
He's a worker.
It's a work, yeah. Tom DeLonge is kayfabing the marks.
Exactly.
You know, and more power to him. It's the whole UFO field is one step removed from the carnies. You know, there's a lot of, you know, carny overtones.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you made me think there earlier when you made a point about these guys that. And then I sort of, like, thought it through as we were talking. It's like, yeah, these guys left their jobs at the Department of Defense, like, the week before the event, but it's like I didn't get the impression. Maybe if you asked like Steve Bassett, he would tell you they were like frantically running down the halls of the Pentagon with papers flying out like in a movie and shit. But it's like I didn't get the impression, to throw it back to the pro wrestling analogy, that these guys like turned heel or turned face. Like these dudes, they didn't just betray the government right now by being involved with this. I assume like this did not come as a surprise to the halls of power that are guarding the UFO secret.
Right. Yeah, this is not like, oh, what a sudden change of heart that they're going to, you know, possibly. You know, the thing is, somebody brought up a good point. You know, the security oaths these guys sign don't expire at retirement. So either they're going to violate the security oaths, or what they're going to tell you isn't covered by the security oaths.
Right.
And the first thing isn't very likely. The second thing is likely, but means you aren't going to get any information that is either true, or if it's true, not information you couldn't find somewhere else.
Right, right, right. That's the weird part. And it's like, again, it's like they're not going behind the government's back. Clearly the government knows what, you know. I don't want to say they're like in on it, but they're accepting of it, I guess. So you would think, you know, you think this would be like scandalous, but it's not.
Right.
And it's kind of portrayed that way in some circles, where it's like, these guys just jump ship. It's like,
yeah.
No, they didn't jump ship.
Man, they're you know, hero badasses who are standing up for the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not. And, you know, it's I don't care either way. I think it's just fun watching. You know, it's fun watching the reactions. And, you know, I think I don't know who said it, but there was a comment, I don't know if it was on UFO Updates, the UFO Updates group or somewhere on Facebook or Twitter, somebody turned Benowitz into a verb, you know, and belongs being Benowitz. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Because I think, you know, people were saying that 2 years ago when this stuff started, like, this is very Paul Benowitz-y. We've got somebody saying, you know, I've got people on the inside feeding the information, and coincidentally it's what I already suspected. So, you know, just run with that.
Right. Yeah. And the funny thing is too, Somebody may think that's like, this is trying to have a bake sale to build a spaceship, but also when you look at like their rollout, it's like when you do, I know we're probably unfairly comparing this to a Kickstarter, but it's like when you do one of those things, there's like an end game, there's like one end game. Their thing is like, we're going to do 17 different things. Like, just pick one thing, just pick the one thing that costs the least and do that. And then come back to us and let us know how that worked out. And if it was a fucking roaring success, then
we'll give you more money.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll give you money, period. We'll start to give you money.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Demonstrate, you know, some kind of substantive proof of concept for whatever you're going to do. Something a little bit more than there was a UFO that appeared near the USS Nimitz. It's like, okay, that's dynamite, but I think I've read about that before, so that isn't new information. Well, it's new information that we cared so much. You know,
that's the spin on it, right? Yeah.
Are
they implying,
know,
like,
what,
look more into it? Like, is this one of those, like, Stan Friedman goes to the National Archives and finds a memo type of thing? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the sort of vibe I got from it was, well, you may have known this happened, but what you didn't know is that there was an email sent from one desk in the Pentagon to another desk in the Pentagon saying, hey, you know anything about this? You know, which is...
Right.
Which, yeah, I would expect to happen. The Air Force cares about things that are in the air. The Navy cares about things that are near their ships. That's, you know, it just takes me back. Like, the first, like, really sort of hardcore UFO-type book I read back in high school was Howard Bloom's Out There. And that's where I learned about the MJ-12 papers and all that stuff. And the conclusion was, you know, the defense establishment is very interested in UFOs, and it's very interested because it has no idea what they are. And they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, the idea that some of the disinformation that might be flying around is to camouflage the fact that maybe those in charge aren't fully sure what's going on with some of these things. Mm. But they, you know, it's better to have a conspiracy theory out there that they know everything and they've got treaties with, you know, 34 of the 72 alien species that live on the Earth. And, you know, they know everything and control everything, because reality is, you know, they don't know everything and they can't control anything, which is much scarier.
Yeah, yeah. We're heading toward the end. Can I keep you a little past the hour? I won't keep you too long.
Yeah, a little bit past the hour is fine.
All right. Yeah, it's disappointing. And we'll see what happens. I don't know what, you know. There doesn't seem to, in a sense, it's kind of like now they're in the position that I kind of challenged them to be in the first place, I guess. It's like, what else are they going to do? Come back and be like, hey, guys, we're serious. We're really serious, guys. we're really serious about this. So could you please donate? Because it's not, we haven't really gotten any money. Like, what if they get no money? You know what I mean? Because the donation thing didn't seem, you know, they're trying to raise, their pie in the sky goal is like $50 million. Now, I'm sure they don't even really believe they're going to get that. But it's like,
no.
I'd be stunned if they got $500,000.
I would be too. And if they do get a bunch of money, the only thing I can think is it would not surprise me if there are people out there who have already pledged or promised some money, and that money shows up as they're, you know, sort of, you know, trying to get donations. Like, look how many people are interested. We've already got, you know, $85,000.
Right, right.
You know, overnight,
a little bit of change in the start. Like B.O.B.
exactly.
Did that GoFundMe for the Flat Earth, and he said he put $1,000 of his own money in first. It's like,
right.
That's another thing. I mean, I'm sure Tom DeLonge has invested money in this, but I mean, hell, if I was him, I would probably have this perspective. I wish he doesn't, but it's like, I would at least tell people what I put into it, because that's part of the whole critique. Where it's like, you're a super rich millionaire. How much, you know, do it yourself. If he came back and was like, guys, I've spent $5 million on on that logo alone. You know, how much do you think this webcast costs? It's like,
do you know how much the focus groups cost to come up with the name To the Stars Academy?
For arts and sciences.
I mean, for arts and sciences, yes. You know, some of the things, I'm probably not being fair to this whole thing at all, but, you know, one of the things, the impression I get is that, well, what's Tom DeLonge contributing to this? He's contributing the fact that he's Tom DeLonge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, his notoriety and personality is what's going to drive this thing.
What it says in the stock thing, yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'm old. I know I'm not with it. I fully acknowledge that. But I don't know. You take it out to America and say, hey, Tom DeLonge. You're like, who the hell is Tom DeLonge?
Right, right.
The guy from Blink 182. Oh, yeah, Blink 182. They're a band, right? You know, it's like he's not Paul McCartney.
Yeah, no. Yeah, he's not an A-list, like, upper echelon.
No.
Michael Jackson could have got away with this kind of scheme.
I would have invested if Michael Jackson said he had the truth about the aliens. I'm like, well, yes, where's my check? I will.
Like, if anyone would know, if the aliens came here and contacted anyone, they would have contacted Michael Jackson. So,
yeah,
here's my money.
This guy's clearly the leader of the humans. Let's talk to him.
Yeah, they're like, well, he's everywhere, and people seem to love him, so clearly he's their leader. It's like,
and get us some of this Pepsi that he drinks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh my God, that's probably is what they think. It's like they worship this Michael Jackson, and they drink Pepsi. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Their
customs are strange, but I think we can infiltrate them.
But the music is really
Michael,
good.
Let's wear Michael Jackson's body like a skin and walk among them.
That's how it all went wrong, folks.
You know, I'm wondering. Maybe. No, I'm not.
Tom DeLonge, we'll see how it goes. There's not much more to say. I think I hit on all my complaints regarding this.
Yeah. Like my opinion was like, this is a lot of the sort of thing we've seen before with promises of disclosure and revelation and it's not the first time that, that somebody famous has gotten involved. I mean, I'm actually surprised that you know, Dan Aykroyd didn't do something along these lines first, because he's been involved with this sort of stuff for a very long time. But
I have
Dan
a theory
Aykroyd
in a sense. I don't know if this applies to Dan Aykroyd, but I have a theory kind of like, this is why also the Tom DeLonge thing kind of is baffling to me, because I have this sort of theory where it's like, I think once you kind of think you figured it out, you like stop, you bail out or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think Dan Aykroyd probably, I think somewhere along the line, someone probably gave Dan Aykroyd just enough information that he was kind of like, I'm good. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Whether it's true or not, who knows? But it's like, you know, he's a super celebrity. He has a lot of friends and friends of friends. And next thing you know, like some Air Force colonel like comes over to him and says, oh, I'm going to tell you this. You can't ever tell anybody. You know, and that's
yeah.
it. Then he's just like, so my theory, I guess, is just like, once, if people get that kind of insight, I don't think they're really compelled to like then go and tell, they almost feel like satisfied. So I'm surprised.
Right.
And considering
yeah.
what Tom DeLonge claims, they keep, he's heard all this crazy shit. It's like, then you should probably just shut up and keep listening. Like, you know?
Yeah. You know, maybe it's just me, but if I had insiders telling me this stuff, what I would probably say is, you know what? I'm interested in hearing this. I'm not interested in being your spokesperson, but I would love to just sort of hang out with you and have you tell me things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
but,
yeah. It's like, I'm not going to tell anybody what you're telling me, but I'm,
right.
I'll keep listening.
I think what concerns me and what sort of like triggers my spidey sense on this is, you know, they are insiders who want the public to know the truth. It's like, see, that's where it falls apart for them. Now, I like that idea that Dan Aykroyd, that somebody, you know, told him just enough to, you know, sort of satisfy his curiosity or whatever, or, you know, told him enough that he thinks he knows enough.
Right.
But you know, the red flags are, we want the public to know about this. Why would you want the public to know? The public is crazy. Who knows what they'll do with this information?
Right, right.
You know,
who authorized you, guy?
Right. Oh, this is, if there is stuff the public doesn't know, you know, maybe the public should know, but maybe the former Blink-182 frontman is not the man to bring it to the public. And,
right.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I think he's probably looking for a payday of some sort, which is fine. But I just from interviews and things, he seems to be sincere to a degree.
I don't think he's
yeah.
like working an angle here. It's like
no.
I think he's being taken.
I think his insiders are. I think that. That the Defense Department guys are probably working some sort of angle, and he might have an inkling that not everything is on the up and up, but, you know, doing all of this in the open is a way to sort of force some transparency, maybe.
Yeah.
So I can see from his point of view why doing this all publicly might be a good thing, but it's a strange situation, but at the same time, it's more of a thing. In a lot of ways. Yeah, it's ufology. It's the next big revelation. It's the latest
dog and pony UFO show.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping they would do their big announcement, the National Press Club, Richard Hoagland style. You know,
That
sort of, the Enterprise mission has a, God, Hoagland.
I attended a couple, not Richard Hoagland ones, but X-Conference ones at the National Press Club. There's a picture, there's a picture of me from my very, very youthful days. Yeah, those were crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because back then, I mean, I was young. I was like in my mid-20s. I was like, I'm at the fucking National Press Club talking about UFOs. This shit's real.
Yeah.
This is really going to happen.
This is real. Yeah.
It's like, now here I am, like almost 20 years later. And I'm just like, oh, man.
It's weird how at various times, like, things just have that sort of sense of being authentic. For me, it's any document printed in that sort of typewriter font, that courier font. You know, anything downloaded from like an FTP site, a document in courier type from an FTP site is somehow, you know, it may all be lies, but there's something authentic feeling about it.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with something in the National Press Club. This is something solid. And then Hoagland ruins it all by making little Star Trek in jokes everywhere.
Rich Hoagland, he's a character. You wonder, he's kind of like a Lorenzian era in a way.
Yeah. He had a radio show for a while, didn't he?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was on Art Bell's network.
For a while, yeah. Did your phone?
Network, in quotes. Not mine. No.
Weird. Do you hear like an echoey effect? Let me see.
I did for a second there.
Yeah. There's the lady. Do I sound okay to the people on the chat room? Well, we'll do the plugs anyway. So where can people hear the show?
Okay. People can search for The Saucer Life on iTunes, on Google Play, on iTunes, Google Play, saucerlife.wordpress.com. You can go there as well. You can listen to all the episodes. They're sort of streaming on the page for each episode. And there's a show archive link that has downloadable MP3s of all the episodes. And also, I've got a link to appearances on other shows and podcasts that I've done over the past few years. So
nice.
If you can't get enough of my dulcet tones, that's all there for you.
All right. And the books are under Aaron Gulyas on Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon. Yeah, yeah. Or your local library.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. So that's in the chat room, lively chat room tonight. So that was cool. John and Jim mostly, and Alligator popped in for a while. And Zach Copley even showed up. He even dragged his ragged ass in there. So thanks to those guys. And we'll just stick around a little bit longer on the show, and we'll say goodbye to the folks in the chat room. So there you go. And the website is saucerlife.wordpress.com. Well, you talk about authentic, man. I got that kind of sense listening to your show. I liked it how it evolves kind of from the first episode. I can feel or sense like you're sort of working out the kinks of the show. And to me, that's kind of exciting to watch it like develop before your eyes or before your ears.
Yeah, it's been sort of interesting trying to figure out exactly the way it should go and to make it run smoothly. So yeah, it's been fun to play around with it and sort of get the format down. Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat. You can kind of tell you're creating this as you go along, as opposed to like a show like mine where it's been around forever. So it's like that's just how we do things. You're not constrained by that. That's just how we do things.
Yeah, actually, the premiere of season two is going to have another sort of twist in that I'm going to have somebody else reading some excerpts as well to have a different voice. So not a guest, but just more of a character, I guess. So, you know, reading some of these things. I had a friend who's like, can I read something on there? It's like, I guess you want to. And he's got a really good, deep voice. So it'll be good. And I've got, you know, some stuff that women have written. And it's like, you know what? Having a woman doing this part of the narration would be kind of neat. So
that would be cool,
I might talk my wife into doing doing some contactee love scene narration.
Oh, boy.
She said she's interested. I haven't told her what she'd be reading yet, so she might read it. Like, what is this? This is what you do with your time?
This is your show? Oh, my God. It's pornographic.
My alien porn show, honey. I mean, what did you think I was doing?
It's alien porn over the internet radio. It's,
you know, that,
it's modern art.
You know, when next time I do a resume, I'm going to objective to produce alien porn over the internet radio. That's my goal.
There you go. Yeah. Well, it's really cool. Like I said, it's got a freshness to it that the sort of lit a spark in me because, you know, so like I said, this is episode 20 of the last season, so it's like we're getting closer here, and I have all this list of ideas, and it's like, yeah, I can, you know, this. It's time to create, man. It's time to create.
Yeah,
it'll be fun.
I think Binal's Next Generation. you know, could be massive.
Well, I hope so. Jesus. Well, I was gonna. Part of me, I was all fired up about this Las Vegas thing last weekend, but last week. But I don't know. It's kind of petered out for me now. But I was sort of fascinated. Well, I am fascinated in a sense, and you're a conspiracy academic, so I'm interested in your thoughts, I guess, on this in a sense. Just sort of how this one has hooks in it as a conspiracy.
Yeah, there's this sort of, you know, very true thing that the earliest reports are usually not accurate, and stories will, it'll appear like, you know, the narrative changes, but we get more information. But there's stuff with the timeline that's really weird.
Yeah, how it's changed like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on with it, and I think the authorities don't. I mean, I don't blame them. Don't want to look like they aren't sure, you know. And so there's some discrepancies. One thing about this and about other incidents like it is, you know, within minutes of the news breaking, you know, the false flag stories were already out there before anybody knew anything, and that's just for stories where there is something, you know, amiss that might need to be looked at. You know, that kind of Alex Jones style knee jerk, you know, it's the Democrats and George Soros wanting to take our guns, you know, by staging a shooting.
Right.
It's like, well, wouldn't they have taken them already? You know? It's like the Facebook lead. My father's the most patient man on earth. He's been waiting for Obama to take his guns for 8 years. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's that sort of thing. And, you know, it muddies the waters, you know. Muddies the waters just like, you know, it's like the 9/11 theories about, well, it was a laser from the moon that did it.
Yeah,
like, no, it wasn't. We might not know everything that happened in the way it happened, but I'm almost positive it wasn't a laser from the moon.
Yeah.
It just, you know, I kind of wonder, being paranoid, that, you know, how many of these really out there theories are active attempts to discredit anybody who looks deeper.
Well, I think
that
might be the case in a sense, because it's like false flag, I think, is almost now, because false flag's been so used that now fucking the thing is crisis actors, which to me is that's just so awful, you know. You know, it's just the people who are like, this didn't even happen. They're like flat earth people. It's really, to me, there's completely bonkers as flat earth people, and they're just as vehement and scary, where they're like, you're a moron, man. These are actors. None of these people died. It's like, you're crazy, man. You're the definition of a crazy conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Oh, and the people who called up the parents of the kids killed up at Newtown, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So you wonder, in a sense, where it's like, maybe the government didn't create that perspective, but maybe it fostered it, where it's like, yeah, let's just have some trolls, or the Russians did it. I don't know, folks. You know, maybe we'll have some trolls go on and say, and just keep insisting on this shit, just to upset people, you know?
Right.
That could be a that's a more believable conspiracy than that they're actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, I'm, you know, sort of thing where I wouldn't be surprised if there's more to all of these stories than we hear, because there's always more to everything than we hear. But people who write out of the gate are positive they know exactly what happened because, you know, it fits the pattern of what they do.
Right.
You know, it's so dumb that I have to assume they're serving some kind of agenda.
Yeah. I made the mistake of like dipping into Reddit, the conspiracy section, to see kind of what the conversations. There was one thread I should have copied though. Like it made my heart sing as a UFO buff, because it was like, the title of the thread was, "Are we the last generation of conspiracy theorists?" And it was like, oh, I guess everybody's having an existential crisis now.
Yeah, you know, it's like everything's gotten dumb, you know? Ufology has gotten dumb. Conspiracy stuff has really gotten dumb. I mean, you know, we're I don't think we're going to see another Jim Keith or another. I know we're not going to see any more Ken Thomases around. You know.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Jim Mars and all those guys.
This is true. I didn't even really think about it, but yeah.
Much more solid reason. We're going to see guys like that because they grew up writing for magazines and newspapers and doing long-form journalism. And the new generation of conspiracy theorists, they do like some 5 minutes of crap on YouTube.
Exactly.
You know?
And
they just sort of like, I'm just gonna freestyle about why I think that the Jews are behind this. You know, it's like no documentation, no nothing. And when Jim Keith and Ken Thomas wrote The Octopus. You know, you read that and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, this is real. You know, this is. There's some stuff here, but nowadays, I don't know, it's just not the same.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Well, this person was like, we're not going to be, because it's conspiracy for them. They're like, we're not going to be able to get the information anymore. The government's going to clamp down on all alternative media. No one's going to have any more books, which is also true.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But I think the opposite is true. We've got more media than we know what to do with, and nobody can sort through it all.
Yeah, I think their paranoid concern is that like the government's gonna somehow, I think it's akin to like they're gonna take away our guns, where it's like they're gonna take away our internet.
Yeah.
It's like I don't think they can take away the internet, man. Like I think it's pretty, self-sufficient.
I mean, even in China, people find ways to, get what they need to get on the internet. Even
right.
With an internet that's completely locked down. Well, hey, I gotta get to bed.
Oh man! All right, I'm sorry. I can't ramble
get up
on
early.
After the show. All right.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I just need to get some work done and then get to bed. So.
All right, get to work on a new episode of your show because I love it. I want to.
I will. I will. Yeah.
All right, man.
I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Thank you for doing the show. I really appreciate it. And folks, check out this podcast. I'm telling you, it's absolutely amazing. The Saucer Life, a podcast defying saucer history and lore. Aaron Gullius. I'm sorry, man. I feel like a pud now.
No.
It's damn late.
It's fine.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, head on off to bed, man. Thank you so much for doing the show, and I'll be listening.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Bye.
There you go, folks. Oh, that's embarrassing. Aaron's like, I got to go. I'm out of here, but all. Good stuff. You guys got to check out this podcast. It really is quite good. And I was blown away by it. We haven't done in-house notes as much at the end. I don't have a guest for next week quite yet. I have a request out waiting to hear back. If not this guest, then I have a couple other ones that I can give a call to. And what else is going on? As I said, this is episode 20. I'm laying some seeds for some post BOA audio projects over the next week or two. So that's exciting. But you won't hear about that stuff for a long time. So we can look back on this moment when I teased it. That's it. Big thanks to Aaron Gullius for coming on the show. Hopefully another show next week, Tuesday night at 9. I don't have any plans for Halloween shows, but if anyone has a suggestion for a Halloween episode, it would have to be uniquely BOA, so I'll have to give it some thought. And if I can conjure up the right guest for Halloween, we may be able to do it, but I got to think about it. And on that note, we'll sign off for the night. Thanks for listening, folks. Have a good one.